Sometimes you just got to begin to chase a dream that is bigger than you. Sometimes when it seems like you're so far behind, you'll never catch up. You got to get up on your feet. You can't wait on other people to be what you've been called to be.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's my great pleasure and privilege to introduce you to the most loving, compassionate, and giving person I have ever known. He's also my wonderful and dear friend. His name is Dennis Perry. He's the Chief Love Officer and co-founder of the nonprofit charity organization called Operation Food for Life. Well, well, hello, Mr. Super Bunny. Welcome and thank you for taking your time out from your busy schedule to come on my show today.
Well, thank you for having me on your program. I'm honored to be part and share a part of my history.
Dennis, most people in your life and the public know you as a kind, compassionate, hardworking, and a jolly fellow. But behind this wonderful man, there's an incredible and heartbreaking story that you have not shared with too many souls. I understand that it's hard for you to revisit your past. So I want to say thank you, and I feel extremely honored that you gracefully agreed to share your story with me and my listeners today. If you don't mind, please go ahead and tell us what happened to you as a young boy and also your health struggle growing up.
Oh, look, I've had a very interesting journey in my life. As a young lad, of about 5 years old, I contracted a rare disease which is called encephalitis. Encephalitis is carried by a mosquito that's generally gone into a dead animal, and it's withdrawn its blood from a dead animal and put it into a human being.
Mm.
The consequences of that, Julie, is horrific.
Yeah.
Diseased blood from the dead animal that is injected into a human, that will actually go straight to the brain and kill the brain.
Wow.
Very few, if ever, survive from this horrific condition. Those who do are usually left with paralysis in some forms of their bodies for life. Generally, it's found in tropical areas,
yeah.
in swamp. And I was living in a suburb of Sydney as a youngster at school when I contracted that.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences of that is I was taken to the first aid room at school when I collapsed, and then I was taken straight to the doctors, who then called an ambulance.
Yeah.
I can still remember that ambulance journey today, even though that I'm in more senior years.
Yeah.
That took me straight to hospital. At that stage, I was comatized. My mother and father rang,
yeah,
and were told to go straight to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
There I was diagnosed with the disease I previously mentioned. The doctors started to work on my life at that stage, and the treatment in those days was putting a huge needle in the back of your spine,
yeah,
to draw the poison from your blood.
Yeah.
It's called a lumbar puncture.
Mm.
Still got the scars in the back. The doctors came out after doing that procedure and told my parents to prepare for the worst,
yeah,
that it would be unlikely that I would recover because I had not responded well. At that stage, my parents called a priest to come to the hospital to perform the last rites.
Yeah.
During the course of that procedure, I was pronounced clinically dead.
Mm.
After 24 hours. But a miracle happened, and as I reflect back in life after these journeys that I've had, I can see God's hand in my life.
Mm.
I came back to life, but the doctors went saying to my parents that even though I was clinically dead during my hospitalization,
yeah,
the bad news was that it would be unlikely that I could walk or talk again. I was completely paralyzed.
Yeah.
Julia, over a period of some years, I started having intensive physiotherapy. I could not speak.
Yep.
I was being intravenously fed. My parents could only visit me in a very sterile room. They had to be covered just like beekeepers even to visit me because it was so infectious.
Mm.
But even though I didn't know God and I couldn't do anything for myself, he knew me. So the physiotherapists and the medical teams worked tirelessly mm-hmm. on my body, on my feet, to try and get movement on my hands, so I could try at least feed myself.
Wow.
Some years later, I actually was able to come out of that hospital
mm-hmm.
After a lot of work. But the issues were I couldn't talk properly without stuttering. I'd now missed a few years of my schooling, and I was very unsteady on my feet. But despite that, that was my first miracle, so to speak. I shouldn't be alive. I should be dead. Mm. But God had other ideas. Once, that was my first journey. The second was I was abducted by a pedophile while I was going to school. And this was shortly after I started going back to school after spending all those years in hospital. And that pedophile offered me an ice cream and a chocolate while I was on my way to school. And I took the chocolate and ice cream. He said, get in the car and I'll take you to school. I accepted that ride. But what I had not prepared for was that ride didn't take me to school. It took me to a remote area of a national park in Australia. Now, by the time I'd arrived at the park, I was screaming because the remote area was unknown to me. I screamed as much as I like, but no one could hear with any miles. He pulled me out of the car and then sexually violated me and pulled out his knife, ripped off all the clothes and cut me up. He drove off for Julia and he left me virtually for dead. By the time this was happening, Julia, my parents were called by the headmaster at the school, our principal, and said, your son hasn't arrived at school. Where is he? There became that phone call then became one of the biggest searches in Australia's criminal history, as they searched for a young lad who was missing from school, had been abducted. Julia, in those days, this was very, very serious. It made really big headlines today. Today it would not be as much in the focal point as it was in those days. It so happened about 24 hours later that are still missing. And there was a couple of hunters in a remote area, the bushland, and they saw this body on the ground. They were hunting for rabbits and kangaroos. They were hunters in the outback. And they looked at this this body, which they thought was a dead kangaroo that was bleeding profusely from a distance in the night. And one of the hunters said to the other, I'll go and put a gun to its head because that animal's suffering. But as they came over with a shotgun to put what they thought was an animal out of its misery, they found it was a body of a human being. The hunters then took me to hospital. The police were called, and soon I found myself back in an operating theatre. The parents were called to the hospital, and soon the doctors said, your son will not live through the night. He's lost too much blood. He's traumatised, and you better call somebody from a religious organisation if you are a member of faith to come to bedside. Was given the last rites by the Catholic priests. And during the course of the operation to put the body back together, the doctors came out and said, during the operation, your son was pronounced clinically dead. His heart had stopped, and the only way we could get his body going again was with electric shocks put over the heart.
Wow.
It's a miracle. We cannot explain how he's alive today. And so from that second miracle became the largest police hunt in Australia's history for the pedophile from this person who'd done this violent act. I can remember spending many hours in police cars looking at people walking out of homes, trying to identify a person. In detectives' cars, I can remember going to police lineups and looking at many, many thousands of police photos at police stations. Of course, all this happened over a period of a couple of years because, again, I was in hospital for some considerable period of time and had to get over this trauma before I could, go out with the police, etc. Well, it so happened I was with the police when they caught that person. They obviously had a history of pedophiles, and they had been watching this person for some time.
Mm.
I remember the court case, going to court as a young person and having to testify in court, and that was a trauma in itself.
Yeah.
But Julia, twice, I should have been dead. There's no reason today that I should be alive.
Yeah.
But God had another plan far bigger than what I could see.
Yeah.
I didn't know God at that stage,
yeah,
but God certainly knew me.
Yeah.
And now I'd missed out still most of my schooling. And it wasn't long before recovering from this trauma,
yeah,
that my father said, look, son, let's go away for a few days before you go back to school.
Yeah.
And we'll go fishing together. That happened. And on the first day on the fishing expedition,
yeah,
I was taking an empty bottle, a soft drink bottle, to the local shop to get another soft drink for Dad and I. And the shop had stairs leading to it. It was,
yeah,
raining heavily.
Yeah.
And as I ran up the stairs with the empty bottle, I slipped. And with tremendous force, the glass, the bottle was still in my hand.
Mm.
And there were screams everywhere,
yeah,
from me as the hand collided with the cement.
Yeah.
And from the people behind the counter who saw the hand separate from the arm. And I wasn't the only one that collapsed on that day. My father came running.
Yeah.
Locals in the area came running.
Yeah.
And of course, people were caring for the people behind the counter.
Yeah.
Soon the hand was placed in an esky. And soon I was straight away off to the local hospital. And during the course of trying to put the hand back on,
yeah,
the body gave up again.
Jeez.
And the doctors would still say, and I didn't hear about this until many, many months later, because I'd been through too much as at that stage.
Yeah.
And my parents said, can I tell him that he died during that operation? He couldn't handle it.
Mm.
So I wasn't told until a long time later that actually that the heart stopped as I put the hand back on.
Yeah.
They had to put electric shocks over the heart again. That they could not get the heart going.
Yeah.
And as they were wheeling me out of the theatre clinically dead, one of the doctors saw a toe moving.
Yeah.
And wheeled me back in. And there's electric shocks going all over the wards, all over the theatre again. And the heart came back and started pounding, boom, boom, boom again. Julia, not only did they restore the hand, but they restored my life.
Yeah.
And I still didn't know God.
Yeah.
And it was through my convalescing in hospital, as going through the many procedures and operations to get the hand working, yeah, again and back on the with connecting with the arm.
Yeah.
That God spoke to me for the first time. He came to me and he spoke to me as clear as I'm speaking to,
yeah,
you. And he said, Dennis, look back on your life. Your life now no longer belongs to you. It belongs to me.
Mm.
I own it. I claim it. And I've got something special for you to do.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that all meant. I had no idea, but not being from a Christian faith, what this is all about. But I soon learned that God wasn't going to tell me everything I needed to know in one conversation.
Yeah.
He only tells me what I need, what he had in mind,
yeah,
for me as a need to know basis.
Obviously, Dennis.
Yeah.
This guy don't know how to kill you, because all they have to do is just remove the batteries from you and that's it. Your history. But seriously, Dennis, you were dealt with such a harsh, say, rotten life, and some would say you have every reason to turn your back on God, to blame him and despise him for giving you such terrible challenges.
Mm.
However, you seem to be doing the exact opposite.
Mm.
You are full of faith and love for him.
Mm.
Dennis, I hear what you said earlier, but I must ask you again, did God really, truly speak to you, and what did he say?
Well, he did, and it's clear as I'm speaking to you today, he told me my mission in life would be helping the less fortunate, and it would primarily begin in the islands of the South Pacific. Now, I'd never been travelling overseas. I couldn't even name what island was in the South Pacific. But from the moment he told me that, and through my life, that's exactly what's happened. And he gave me that appointment and that anointment years in advance of it all happening. Amazing.
It is, Dennis, and you are a very special man. You took your life circumstance as a great blessing and dedicated close to 2 decades of your life. You sacrificed your own time and your money helping and serving the underprivileged. For the past 14 years, you have been saving and feeding thousands of people in PNG. I find that absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, look, there's a lot of things I've learned, Julia, through my experiences. And the learnings have been wonderful. The first thing I've learned that is whoever's listening to this conversation today and they're going through a hard time, your disappointment may be God's appointment. Yeah. There's a blessing for you when you're going through those dark hours.
Yeah.
I've learned that life's experiences, and sometimes we struggle, but they're there to help us meet those challenges. And if we can overcome those small challenges we have in life, that strengthens us up to handle the bigger things that come to us in life's journey.
Yeah.
Life's experiences can either shape us or they can sink us.
Yeah.
And look, I've seen many in my life whose experiences has led to, through bad things happening in their life, a life of bitterness.
Yeah.
But I've got to tell you that I think your attitude must be, is despite that bitterness, you can take an attitude and a position of being either bitter or better.
Yeah.
And bitterness only eats away at your life. And, and you have this chip on your shoulder and I'll never leave you.
Yeah.
But better, if you take an attitude, I don't know why this is happening to me, but I know the bad news has got a use-by date. I'm going to overcome because I know there's something that I'm going to learn through this that's going to be strengthen me to handle the big issues that come in my life.
What a wonderful attitude, Dennis. Do you always have this great positive attitude and determination, or did you learn through some kind of counseling?
In the days I went through these traumas, there was no counseling available.
Yeah.
But look, I've learned to grow in my faith in Christianity. I've learned to take a positive attitude in my walk with God, and everything that I'm speaking to you, I've learned from the experiences of my faith, and God has given me this positive attitude, this you can do it attitude, or keep at it attitude in my life. He's taught me never give up, just look up. Because there's great news coming, and he teaches me that every day of the week.
It's a great honor and privilege to have you in my life, Dennis. You are such a beautiful human being.
Oh, look, I don't deserve those comments, but I give them graciously back to God. But let me tell you, Julie, whoever's listening to this, I don't care what you're going through today.
Yeah.
A setback can be a setup for a comeback. Your trials, if you look at it positively, can be your triumph.
Mm.
Your stumbling blocks can be your stepping stones. Your scars, and I've got many, can be turned into stars.
Yeah.
And your crosses, your burdens, the crosses you carry in your life, can be turned to crowns.
Yeah.
And God has never turned his back on me, nor will I turn my back on him.
Yeah. Last year, my family and I had the privilege to join you, Dave, Jim, and Megan to PNG. It was an eye-opening experience for us. I was blown away by what I have seen. It was heartbreaking to watch hundreds of children and adults being literally thrown away as trash by the society. And I can't believe that you, Jim, Megan, and the rest of the team of from Operation Food for Life risk your own lives to feed the poor people that live on the Burundi rubbish dump. If you don't mind, can you please share with the listeners exactly what Operation Food for Life do in PNG, Dennis?
Sure. Look, there's 101 things that we do, but time does not permit me to go over all of them. But what we do is this, is we do not replicate what another humanitarian agency is doing. We go into primarily they'll be in areas of quite, some will be very dangerous.
Yeah.
Some will be very confronting.
Yeah.
But they will involve, for example, going onto a rubbish dump, and we've been the only Christian organisation in doing this, that we're actually feeding and clothing and providing medical assistance to people who physically live on the garbage dump or at the sides of the dump.
Yeah.
Without our intervention, they would face either death because of lack of food
or
disease. Before I started doing this work 14 years ago, they told me there was a lot of people dying on the dump because of hunger or either diseases.
Yeah.
But today, we've been able to minimise that dramatically. We've still got that relationship with that community. It is my goal to break the curse of those kids and those families living there again.
Yeah.
And I've got a strategy when I want to do that.
Mm.
We go into the hospital where people are being cared for, who are terminally ill with AIDS.
Yeah.
We're the only people that have this privilege to do that, where we can minister to their physical, emotional, spiritual needs. We can feed them. We can pray with them. We've been doing that for 14 years, and what a blessing that is.
Yeah.
We've built a school for poor children in a poor village. We're just finishing off a sanctuary which will provide a 24/7 Christian care for unwanted children, youth and teens.
Yeah.
We will never turn anybody away who comes to our gates that need help.
Mm.
And we are close now to opening that. Currently we have 35 kids that are currently in the sanctuary now. So that's going to be a blessing. We go into the prisons and we share the love of God and our love to them. And when we look at the prisoners, we not look at what they are now, but we look at the potential of what they could be when they come out of prison.
Yeah.
We go into poor communities too, and we provide food, clothing, and dignity and hope.
Yeah.
That's just a small part of what we do
with
a ministry that's called Operation Food for Life.
I really don't know how you and the team could do it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to PNG with you. I've seen the unimaginable suffering.
Yep.
And I'm still being traumatized by it. It has been over a year now and I haven't gotten over it. Dennis, I have personally seen you in action. You're one of the most dedicated and hardworking humanitarian I have ever met. You seem to have an endless supply of energy. You rise before the sun and you do not rest until late into the night. This is why I nicknamed you Super Bunny. You remind me of that Energizer commercial. Where do you get your energy from?
Well, it's humanly impossible, I've got to tell you. I've got to tell you, I've got to start my engine up. It's like you're starting up a car. It takes a bit of time to start your car sometimes.
Yeah.
You've got to pull the choke. Well, my body's exactly the same.
Mm.
But what I learned to do is the Bible tells me that every day, just get out of bed and say, as the Bible verse says, this is the day that God has made for you. Get up, rejoice, and be glad in it. And so I've got to talk myself to turn the starter motor on.
Yeah.
And just energize, here's the energizer bunny coming again, and energize myself.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be fueled up, spiritually, physically fueled up for the day and for the evening, as long as I can, for as long as I ever can, to serve others above myself.
You put me to shame, that's for sure. I believe you have been recently in and out of the hospital due to some serious health issues.
Mm.
Also, you have refused to follow the doctor's order to stay in bed and cut down your workload.
Mm.
Is that right, Mr. Perry?
Yeah, look, Julia, people of my age, and I've got to tell your listeners that I'm a young at heart.
Yep.
I'm nearly 70, going on 21.
I reckon you are going on 15.
But I've got to tell you, people my age die in bed.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, it doesn't matter how sick or ill I am.
Yeah.
I would rather die serving others
than
living a life of ease and living a life for self.
Yeah.
So I can't serve others while I'm laying in bed knowing that I've still got two hands, two eyes, two feet that can get out of bed and go and help somebody else. Because I spent more than many years laying in bed. I've served that sentence. Now it's time to get out of bed and don't worry about what issues you have.
Yeah.
Let's go and help others that got bigger issues and make the world a better place by us helping those less fortunate.
Yeah. Your attitude is completely opposite from the typical human being. I don't think you are human at all, Dennis. I think I'm on the money for calling you Super Bunny.
I've got a passion for compassion, and and it's witnessed by my actions. I will never die. I'll just wait till God blows the full-time whistle and says, Dennis, I'm retiring you. Enough. You've done enough. Pass the baton on to somebody else. But I could tell you, I'm just going to keep going and keep going and keep going as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, you probably will be the only one, the only human being left on this earth.
Hey, listen, you'll probably see me on Birini rubbish tip at 102 years of age with a walking cane and still going around feeding people.
I wouldn't be surprised, Dennis. Dennis, I want to say something. You know, there's a large number of well-known charities, organizations. They spend as high as 80% of the funds on wages and admin fees. And their CEOs earn more than $500,000 a year. Sometimes I couldn't help but think that it's more like a business than a charity. You're the only CEO that I know that does not get paid and spends your own money to serve the underprivileged and happy to do so. Is there a missing screw somewhere in your head?
Look, as you know, we're all volunteers, and the ministry we do is 24/7 for me. Yeah. That's 24/7. You know that. You see it. You feel it. I am mindful that other well-known charities have extremely large overheads, which they've got to pay for.
Yeah.
They've got marketing and advertising expenses they've got to pay for.
Uh-huh.
They've got commissions to be paid, payrolls.
Yeah.
And as you said, we're all volunteers. We have none of that.
Yeah.
So any person that donates to us can be very confident that our overheads are very minimal.
Yeah.
And we are very mindful as a registered Australian charity of the stewardship and trust that donors have placed on us to ensure that as much as possible of their donations reach those where the donor intended, not to pay somebody's wage, not to pay marketing expenses, to go in and reach those people in need.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud to say that our teachers at our school, those at the sanctuary building that we're doing, all our volunteers that we call on in Papua New Guinea, we all do that because we just love what we're doing. None of us are paid. I think if you're paid to work for a charity, there's not a lot of sacrifice involved in that because you get rewarded for serving others.
That's right.
I believe strongly the greatest reward you have is when you can do something for somebody else as a personal sacrifice to yourself and make their world and their place and their position a much better place for you being there.
May I ask how much of the funds raised by Operation Food for Life actually go directly to the people?
Well, consistently, as you said, most charities work around about 70 to 80% of that remains within their charities to pay for expenses and very little reaches. With us, on an average and consistently, our expenditure is only 15 to 16% every year. And so, for example, every donor's dollar, if they give a dollar, 85, on an average, 85 or over 80 cents will reach that person who it's intended to. Naturally, we do have small expenses, but we've got no shop front, no marketing, nobody's paid. And so that's what makes it so, so fantastic. Fantastic for people that know that that money, where it's intended, most will reach those in need.
Yeah. It's really comforting to know that, you know, majority of the money that donated goes straight to the people that in need instead of to...
And it's great because our books, we're an Australian registered charity. They're independently audited. We are transparent. Mm. In everything that we do, and we've got being a Christian organisation with integrity, and for what we do and what you see, the lives being changed, you know that we are making a difference, and we're only doing it because of the kindness and the generosity of our faithful donors who do appreciate that we are different than other charities, and they can see the difference that what we're doing in making and helping people's lives through the physical, emotional and spiritual support we give them.
I believe that you are going back to PNG tomorrow.
Sure am, yep. Can't wait to get on the plane.
Well, I wish you have a safe trip to PNG, and Simon, Jeremy and I want to send our love to all the volunteers, the children and the people of PNG. So give them lots of hugs and kisses for us.
Oh, look, I'll be very happy to convey those sentiments, not only to those that the friends that you've made up there, but certainly the friends you've made in prison,
yes.
The people at the school, all the friends. I know they'll be delighted to have those well wishes. And the legacy that you, Simeon and Jeremy, have left, that has never been forgotten and will never, ever be forgotten from those lives that you touched too, Julia.
Yeah.
And you can see it, the difference that you have made by the experience of volunteering with Operation Food for Life.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Also, thank you, Dennis, for talking to me today and share your amazing life journey. I wish you have a safe journey, and I'll talk to you some more when you get back.
It's been a delight to be interviewed by you, Julia. I pray that my testimony will encourage and help others and inspire others that you can make a difference, and all it takes is a pair. And you're never too young to serve, and all you need is a pair of hands, a pair of feet, and a passion to go out and make a difference in the world. And you are doing that through not only through Operation Food for Life and Simeon, but you're doing it through our community organisations, Rotary and others that you so generously give.
Yeah.
Shall we always have a commitment to serve others above self?
Oh, thank you, Dennis. I hope you have a good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks very much, Julian.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye. That's all, folks. Don't forget to tune in next week because I will be talking to an inspiring young entrepreneur. He started his first company at age 15. You really want to hear what he has to say. Thanks. Bye.